Are you interested in understanding GLP-1 medications like Ozempic, Wegovy, or Mounjaro? Then join us on The Plus Sides, Cracking the Obesity Code, the groundbreaking podcast helping people change their lives one episode at a time. The Plus Sides podcast is a disruptor. We're breaking down barriers, smashing stereotypes, and sharing inspiring stories that'll leave you feeling informed and empowered. Join us every week to learn from doctors who are specialists around GLP-1 medications like Ozempic, Wegovy, and Mounjaro. They'll provide you with science and facts to validate these incredible stories. But that's not all. We'll also bring you the voices of the GLP-1 Mounjaro TikTok community, real people who face the challenges of obesity-related diseases and disorders and discovered the incredible plus sides of GLP-1 medications. Our episodes are filled with heartwarming stories, laughter, and moments of triumph. You'll connect with our amazing community members who are reclaiming their health and experiencing their fullest lives. Are you ready to embark on a journey of discovery and empowerment? Tune in to The Plus Sides, Cracking the Obesity Code, and together we'll change the narrative around obesity and end the stigma. Subscribe now on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform and join our incredible community. Let's celebrate the plus sides of life together, because every story deserves to be heard. Every life deserves to shine, and everyone deserves access to expert knowledge and medication. The Plus Sides Podcast. You're not alone. It's not your fault.
Say goodbye to restrictive weight loss methods and hello to Iveem, the number one prescriber of GLP-1 medications. GLP-1s curb cravings, stabilize blood sugar, increase energy, and balance A1C levels to regulate your body and kickstart your weight loss journey. Iveem is committed to making medical weight loss accessible, affordable, and customized, because we believe that's how it should be. Sign up for free and get 20% off our accessibility programs.
Introducing Peptide Vite. It's the first daily natural vitamin to help support a reduction in the major side effects of GLP-1s. Peptide Vite supports fatigue, nausea, GI side effects, and promotes better metabolism. It is third-party tested, made in the USA, in a FDA-certified facility. Peptide Vite is a game-changer all-in-one daily supplement, pharmacist and physician formulated to be safe and effective. Use code PLUS20 for 20% off at zennutrients.com.
It's time for a change rooted in lasting, evidence-backed wellness. Say goodbye to unsustainable diet culture with Friday's Weight Management Program, a nationwide virtual care platform built to address your biology.
The reason why I started Fridays is that I noticed that patients with obesity are often improperly treated and told to eat less and move more. Well, the science is in, and we now know that obesity is a chronic medical condition like high blood pressure and diabetes, and that there are many factors, including your genetics, that play a role in the development of obesity. We understand this at Fridays, and that's why we make sure to order labs and specific medications that work with you and your biology.
We're revolutionizing weight management, steering clear of weight loss fads, and embracing a scientifically driven approach. Our program charts a path to a healthier you, leveraging evidence-based treatments, nutritional support, and a team of specialized clinicians dedicated to guiding you towards optimal health. We ensure swift appointment scheduling and provide a knowledgeable insurance team for handling prior authorizations for GLP-1 medication. Fridays will also provide safe, compounded GLP-1 medication alternatives with fair and industry-leading pricing. Our eligibility quiz will match you with the provider that corresponds with your medical needs. Go to joinfridays.com to begin your journey to a healthier you today.
I think when you hear people, you know, going on like that and sourcing Ozempic.
So I absolutely understand why people do. They're desperate. Mm. They're desperate for treatment. They're not getting the treatment that they need and deserve, because in so many places in Ireland, obesity is not recognised as a chronic disease. It's not treated as a chronic disease like we treat hypertension and asthma and COPD, whereas this is a very real and treatable medical condition.
Why is it not treated the same across the country?
Because of lack of awareness, lack of knowledge about the complexity, about the dysregulation of appetite, the genetic links, about the neurochemistry of what's going on, about the environmental factors that influence weight. People are told all you need to do is eat less and move move more. Mm-hmm. And with due respect to somebody with an eating disorder, that's like telling somebody with anorexia to just eat more. Like, it's a gross oversimplification. It's absolutely stigmatizing. Telling somebody who's got an issue with obesity to eat less and move more is like telling somebody with depression to cheer up. It doesn't work. You know, blaming them, shaming them, backing them into a corner. People want treatment. They deserve treatment. They need treatment. They come to me and you listen to their story and you listen to the effect that excess weight is having on their everyday life. And there's a difference between, you know, balking against diet culture and this kind of idea of body of the perfect body and what's being promoted. There's a difference between getting rid of that. And we should be discouraging dieting because that is disordered eating. It is unhealthy. It is not sustainable long term. And it is not a treatment for excess weight.
When we talked with Dr. Rachel, again, this is the cognitive behavioral therapist I mentioned that consulted for the Whale, I said to her something about that. I was like, you know what it is? Being on the medicine has put me in a place to receive, right? Guidance on other things that have to do with lifestyle, right? Like, it's not just the weight loss. It's the mental piece of me that always was missing. I'm just in a place to receive the message and apply what they tell me to do. And it does help, but it's almost like any other disease, right? Like, how do we get you to like quit smoking? Maybe we just get you to quit smoking first. And then we talk about the ways to stop quit smoking. You know, like, I feel like we miss that a lot in medicine. But I also feel like there's some areas where we do that right. And I think that we've met so many people in our community that have made those significant life changes. Like one of our friends, and she was on our show about addiction, struggled quite a bit with feeling an addiction to alcohol. Like, she's not necessarily because herself an alcoholic, right? But definitely was drinking all of the time, also felt addicted to food. And then she started taking the medication. She did have some heart stuff before. So eventually she came off the medication because of that. But she did Mounjaro for almost a year, lost like 100 pounds. She did all the things. She changed jobs. She started doing nutrition. She exercises and walks. She started doing book clubs and therapy and all of these different things. And she has continued to lose and not gain weight, even though she's been off Mounjaro for months. Right. So it's amazing. Like if you're in a, but that would never work before. Right. Cause it was all buried under obesity and alcohol and, you know, all these different things. But now she's the best herself she could be. It's incredible, you know?
Yeah, and I think for me, it's a case of, so let's say somebody says to me, I know what to do, I just need to do it. And so yeah. Why? Why is my favorite question of all time? Why can't you do it? Yeah. We can't do it because of our biology, can't do it because of my hunger hormones, my fullness hormones, my reward pathways. And then I can't do it because of my environment and the shit going on in my life. So again, all we can do is control the things that are within our control.
Yes.
Up to recently, the biology wasn't something we can control. And now we have tools that can help us manage that. But again, it's not just that on its own. That facilitates people doing what they know they want to do. I still need to focus on my nutrition. I still need to focus on physical activity. I still need to look at my sleep and my stress and other things. But like I said, I've got more brain space because that caveman has just shut up in my brain.
Yeah.
And it's easier for this guy to keep his eyes on the road. You know.
So we should totally call this episode Shut Up the Caveman.
Shut up, cave woman, or cave person.
Do you feel like over there you have a hurdle in treating people from like we've heard, like from the governments over in Europe, like Belgium has completely banned like treating people with obesity with GLP medications. And I guess the UK has like put out very strict like guidance. It's not like a ban, but it's like very strict guidance on like, we only want these medications thrown out to diabetics and not treatments for obesity. Do you feel like that's like a huge hurdle and how do you change it?
Yeah, so that's a huge issue for us here. So the Medical Council of Ireland, which is kind of, you know, oversees all doctors in Ireland, sent out a communication saying do not prescribe that medication you mentioned for people who don't have obesity. So this is a medication, it's for obesity, and that's all it should be used for. And I, in my medical career, have never received that kind of communication from the medical council about any other disease area. I've never been told not to prescribe beta blockers for migraine. I've never been told not to prescribe an asthma inhaler for emphysema or COPD. I've never been, that has never happened before. So a number of us here who are kind of specialists in the area wrote a stinker of a response, and this is disgraceful. This is discrimination. This is undermining the science and the evidence. These are safe, effective treatments for the chronic disease of obesity. Why does somebody living with obesity not deserve treatment as much as somebody living with diabetes? And I'm not minimizing diabetes. Diabetes is a really important medical problem, but so is excess weight and obesity. So diabetes affects somebody's health, their medical health, their metabolic health. It might affect their physical function and psychological health and learning. So does obesity. So why is one more important than the other? Well, in Ireland, the attitude is, well, your weight is your responsibility. And again, we saw in the Action IO studies and lots of studies, that's how many people living with excess weight feel. This is my fault. I've eaten myself into this situation and I don't deserve treatment. So people who have felt marginalized and, felt it's their fault their entire life, and who felt they don't deserve X, Y, or Z are now being told, well, no, you don't deserve it. And like that is absolutely disgraceful. So we pushed back and made no difference whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And that's where I said, I thought we were winning in the changing the narrative up until these shortages. Because all the pharmacies in Ireland got the same communication from their regulatory body saying, don't give these medications either. So I can have a really fabulous consultation with somebody, we can share an understanding, we can talk through all the treatment options, and they can kind of say, this is the one I think will fit my life best. We can talk through the pros, the cons, the side effects, the benefits, the cost, lifelong treatment. We've done all of that. And then I give them a prescription, they go to the pharmacy, and in 30 seconds, they're absolutely annihilated. They're told, you shouldn't be on this, you're stealing this from somebody who's living with diabetes. But that's unacceptable. But that's bias and stigma, in the world. And again, it's awful. Like, we have many patients who've been on treatment very effectively for a significant time who now cannot access it. And again, I know there are shortages all over the world. And, I think pharmacies in Ireland here are probably getting about 30% of the medication that they need, for the demand that's out there. So it's leading to these situations of who deserves treatment more. And again, that's causing a huge problem. So I think... And some of that, again, has to come back to the pharma companies and their production and how these medications have been launched and put out there and that they didn't plan on the demand that there would be. I think, again, some of it does come down to the inappropriate use that's happening. And, any media article over here, you'll hear about the skinny jab. You'll hear about Hollywood's worst kept secret. You'll hear about, quick fixes. Again, that's the narrative that's been portrayed. It's
the thing here. There's no positive media anything about any of these medications. Mm-hmm. Everything is negative. It's either someone died, they had
some positive.
Yeah, but I mean, mainstream media, if you watch the Today Show, Good Morning America, any of those big shows that people watch in the morning or they're getting ready for work, none of those stories are positive. None.
Yeah. And it's interesting over here. There is I thought we were winning. I thought we were kind of, getting across to people, this is a disease. And then these shortages came and things have taken 10 steps backwards. And again, even with me, so if I'm doing anything in the public forum, I don't say the names of these medications, the generic name, the brand name, or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Because again, I can't be seen to promote or advertise a medication. But that then just adds to the misinformation. People don't know what we're talking about when we're talking about these things. So there's a huge challenge in getting information across to people effectively. And so people know what we're talking about. I couldn't talk about infections without talking about antibiotics. But that's the way kind of things are. So my face and my name was in a national newspaper here with a dollar figure underneath my name for the amount of money I had received from a pharma company for doing educational talks. But again, if I'm going to drive across the country for a couple of hours, give talks and drive home, I deserve reimbursement for that because that's taking time. Right. That's taking time. But again, my friend who's a urologist who gives a talk about an overactive bladder or something else, he's not in the newspaper. But it's framed as, fat cat doctors, skimming off the top, kind of I wish I was that cheap to buy. I'd be driving a much nicer car if I was. But right. But again, like, it's just there's different standards are applied. And like, it's exhausting. And it has led to some of us, I suppose, not putting our head up as much and not talking as much, because again, there's a backlash against it, you know.
Right.
But again, I suppose for me, it comes back to kind of, you know, and what I have to keep reminding myself. Like, I might be sitting in a clinic and I might have the same conversation 10 or 15 times in a day. Yeah. But it's the first time that person who's sitting in front of me is having the conversation.
Right.
And to appreciate how much bravery, how much effort, how long it took for that person to come to the decision to come and see me in the first place. Yeah. Like, I need to be present and talk to that person because this is an important conversation for them. So I think, you know, for me, it has to come back to the reason we all do these things is to improve, you know, the lives of people who are living with obesity, to improve their health, to improve function, to improve well-being. And like that should be the goal. But, you know, stigmatizing them, depriving them of treatments, like creating barriers to accessing treatments, it's not in anybody's interest.
Yeah. We get a lot of "you're not sick enough" hit yet here, right? Like, you don't have type 2 diabetes, so you're not sick enough yet, right? I mean, we hear it from our insurance companies. They've literally been like, "Hey, you know, your A1C has gone down, even though it was a 6-7, and you know, you probably just took this too soon, so you're gonna have to stop now because we're not gonna cover it." Well, they're a diabetic, right? Like, at least in the States, it's 6-5 is what we do for type 2. But if you're, you know, I would say a 6, then people are like, "You're not a diabetic. You don't deserve this medication." And, you know, when the chances are, based on their history, they're likely progressing down that way, you know? Mm. And it's the whole I would say the whole idea of like preventative medicine here is just like, it's not a thing. Like, nobody's gonna, we really don't have that option for us. Even for people that like take things for HIV, like prevention, that's another really difficult thing for them to overcome. Mm. You know,
we treat the complications, we treat the comorbidities of obesity, but how often are we treating the underlying issue?
Yeah, exactly.
So again, and that was again one of the frustrations. You know, one of the many things that got me into this area was I was kind of sick of again treating the complications, whereas we're not treating the underlying cause. You know, right. So we should be going upstream and treating that. But, you know, we're not. Like, we're putting out fires, we're treating kind of the consequences, whereas if we actually treat the underlying issue and treat it more aggressively and treat it earlier and had these conversations with people without stigma or blame and shame, then we're going to prevent a lot of medical issues, you know?
Yeah. I think it's interesting, like, you know, going back to what it's like to be able to be healing and getting better, you know, with this. I think that I can't believe that at 44 years old, with all the stuff I've gone through, you know, with this disease for as long as I've had it, that I wake up every day excited about my life. I've never, ever felt that way before. I always felt like I got up every day. I would like try to find a reason to get out of bed.
Right.
And because I have a son that I'm like obsessed with, it took me a long time to have him because obesity. And now I have him and he's so incredible and brilliant and like just all the things, I would always be like, that's what I'm getting out of bed for, you know? Well, here's the thing. He just turned 11. And so now it's like, he needs me less ways that I'm a mother now. So what am I getting out of bed for? And the answer is for me. Like, and that I never, ever, ever thought that would happen. And it's just been legitimately one of the most incredible experiences of my life. And I just want everybody to know about this, you know, because it's been so miraculous. And I'm so thankful that you've come to talk with us about this and the things that you've said, man, we're going to be clipping that all over the place. So just get
be waiting for the flood.
Yeah, I think for me, it's a case of like, and most people I see would say, you know, I've done it all. I've done all the diet stock. I've done all the programs. I've invested, you know, hundreds of thousands in this. And with a very smug smile on my face, I'd say to them, you've never been treated.
Yeah.
You've got a medical issue. Yes, it's never been treated. We wouldn't DIY blood pressure. We wouldn't DIY asthma. We'd say, no, you deserve treatment. You deserve support. How can I help you and support you? And more importantly, how can we, you know, for me, I run a medical weight management clinic But I think it's vitally important that we give people information. So I put all the treatments on the table. I talk about surgery, I talk about medications, I talk about life treatment, I talk about the pros and cons of each. And then it's about figuring out what is the right treatment for an individual. And like I said, the right treatment at the right time for the right person. Because the right treatment for me today might be different. Maybe I can't commit to what surgery is going to entail. Maybe I can't afford it. Maybe I don't have insurance coverage. Maybe I can't access it. Maybe, you know, maybe I want to become pregnant in 6 months or a year, and the advice is that I would wait longer. Maybe, you know, maybe I've got polycystic ovarian syndrome and I need something that's going to kind of treat that to facilitate a pregnancy or something. So again, for me, it's a case of we talk to the person in front of us, we give them as much information as we humanly can, and we trust that they will make the right decision for them in the context of life. Yeah. And then we follow them up. Like, Jesus, it's a medical condition, it's a chronic disease. So we follow them up. We say, how are you getting on? Like, you know, how does this feel? What are the side effects? What are the benefits? Because everybody's going to respond differently. Again, in my practice, 50% of people won't get a strong response from an anti-obesity medication. Yeah. And again, it can be devastating for those people unless you've actually kind of talked about why that is, why it's not their fault, why, you know, this is not addressing the pathways that they're struggling with in their subconscious brain or in their life. So maybe that person deserves and needs a different treatment. So again, it's about the kind of following up. Again, I might see somebody who comes back to me, and if we go back to the scales, they've lost a shit ton of weight. But they're losing weight because they're vomiting every day and they're feeling sick and food is miserable. And I'm saying to them, no, let's pull back, let's slow down, let's take you off this medication, start again, go slower. And they're saying, no, doc, I love it, I'm losing weight. I'm saying, I don't give a crap if you're losing weight. That's not the way you're supposed to lose weight. This is about health. Absolutely. This is about improving life for you. Whereas again, if we're focused only on the numbers on the scales, that's not telling us the full picture. So again, for me, it's a case of like following people up, asking them, you know, how they're feeling. You know, what in their life, going back to the first time we met, how is their life affected? How has that improved? Looking at kind of, because we'll often see, obviously, with any intervention, whether it's surgical, medication, or life intervention, there's always going to be a response and there's going to be a plateau. Understanding why the plateau happens. Like, I'm the best doctor on the planet when people are losing weight. I'm not as good when people are plateauing. Like, they're not, I'm not as popular. And the amount of my patients who will be reaching a plateau, and no matter how much we've discussed it, they'll start leaning back towards the restriction and the dieting interventions and strategies maybe that they have gone to before. Because that's where we're hardwired. That's the way we can assume. And understanding that those restrictions, the way, you know, we talk about the idea of best weight, the weight we will be when we're living our healthiest life that we can enjoy and sustain. I can get my weight lower, but if I do, I'm potentially stealing from health, I'm stealing from sustainability, and I'm stealing from enjoying life. So I can make myself fucking miserable. I lock myself in a cage for a month and I can lose weight. But it's not sustainable. Yeah. It's not enjoyable. So again, you know, maybe that's where they're going to be. It might be where they want to be, but maybe that's where they're going to be, you know, until a better treatment comes along. And if they're not getting the same response, if they're not getting the response that they need, maybe we need to reassess it. And maybe we talk about a different medication. Maybe we talk about adding a nutritional component. Maybe we talk about kind of, you know, going towards surgery. Like here in Ireland, surgery is incredibly stigmatized. Like it's, you know, we hear about people.
I mean, it is here too. It's an easy way out conversation here too.
Jesus, like, which is just lunacy. Like when you think about kind of, you know, it is the opposite of an easy way out. It is life changing in many fabulous ways, but also in many challenging ways. Yeah. You know, so again, I think, and that's why we need to keep all the options on the table. And even though I treat the chronic disease of obesity, I don't do the surgery. But it's my job to support people and give them the information if that's going to be the right treatment for them. And then support them afterwards if they need it too.
Yeah. You made a good point with about the holistic, you know, making sure if somebody's losing too much weight, is that healthy for that individual? It made me think of this body positivity movement, which is I am all for it. But there are a lot of, I would say, therapists and just your body positivity, I would call them specialists or experts that are so much against GLP-1 therapies and weight loss because they still say it falls into diet culture. And what are your thoughts on that? How do we?
Well, I've lots of thoughts on that. I feel like the problem with me is shutting me up when I get going. But anyway, like this idea that it's body positivity or diet culture. Like, it's just, again, it's black and white. It's one or the other. And that's the way the internet and social media and the modern world is cast. Yeah. Again, like, I actually align with a lot of the ideas of body positivity. Like, in my body, I can appreciate all the fabulous things my body does and has done for me. Mm-hmm. I can appreciate all the good stuff about my body. But again, for me, like, it's not about weight. It's not about size. It's about health. If I have an impairment of health, that's what we're treating. So like I said, you know, if somebody has a body mass index of 35, they might have obesity or they might not. I can use BMI as a screening tool to kind of identify who somebody who might be at risk. And then I look for the impairment of health and I talk to them.
That's fascinating.
So it's not like I said, I'm not walking down the street tapping people on the shoulder saying, come over here, you have something to talk to you about. It's people coming to us when they have an impairment of health. So as far as body positivity, I think we can be body positive. We can also treat people for a chronic disease.
Right. Yeah.
Like, they're not mutually exclusive things. And again, for me, it's, you know, appreciating, you know, all the fabulous things about our body, but also supporting somebody to improve their health. You know, we see a lot of it here too. And there are a lot of kind of people who are quite biased in their approach. And it's actually ironic that kind of, you know, I would imagine the body positive movement, which maybe has kind of come from, you know, the stigma and blame and shame around obesity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are some people in that. Take back control. But some people in that movement are then further stigmatizing and discriminating against those who are on treatment.
Yes, right. They do.
So again, it's ironic that a movement that was born out of stigma and kind of bias and balking against that is now stigmatizing others. You hear about kind of, you know, gastric mutilation for people who've had surgery. There's a huge amount of gaslighting where people are kind of, you know, I listen to it, I go, Jesus, I'll be reconsidering myself. And I'm an expert in this area. And I kind of go, God, they're talking so sensibly. Until I take a step back and say, no, whoa. Like, this is like, it must be so difficult for people to distinguish what is BS versus what is not.
Oh, it so is.
And and again, it's a case of a lot of people say, you know, they'll talk about weight loss at any cost, at any price, weight loss irregardless. Like, it's not, that's not what I do. Like, I'm not a weight loss at any cause or by any means practitioner. No. I'm treating and supporting somebody who's got a medical issue, but I'm treating them and supporting them kind of long-term. So again, you know, for me, you know, we have a significant amount of kind of, you know, there's mindful eating, intuitive eating, body positivity.
Right.
Like, for me, if somebody's psychological health and well-being is affected by diet culture and excess weight, there might be some fabulous benefit to that person psychologically, but it may not help them on a physical function or medical metabolic front.
Yeah, for sure. You know,
why can we not treat both?
Why not?
You know? Agreed. Yeah. I always feel
medication for treating anxiety if it worked for them, even if they weren't losing more than, I don't know, any weight at all, you know, or for like addiction, like what we talked about, you know. I love that too. Go ahead, Kat. Sorry.
I always like to say that I learned to love and enjoy myself as a heavy person, and losing 68 pounds, I'm still on this fence where I still want to be, I don't know if I want to, I still want to be sort of plus size. I know
I'm in that weird place too right now.
So
yeah.
I call that body positivity. So, you know, just a little
bit
healthier.
We are also larger humans, Kat. Like, we're tall and we're just like, we're just larger, like genetically.
I just learned to love it. Yeah.
If we all ate and drank the same thing from the moment we're born, we're not all going to be the same size.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I've got bigger feet. It's it's an issue for me.
You can't fit into a size 7 too, like, right?
But nobody's going to change that for me, you know? But again, if it was affecting my health, you know, that's a different issue.
Yes.
You know, so I think it's, you know, it's talking to people, it's talking to the individual. It's, you know, understanding where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, I'm not trying to convince anybody. I'm just saying, you know, I suppose for me, if I speak to somebody who's got lived experience of excess weight or obesity, they get it. They get it immediately. They get it quicker than doctors, than healthcare practitioners, than anybody else, because they've lived every second of the biology. And they have been there, done that, bought the t-shirt, you know, but for them to understand why they have an issue, why the things they're doing, you know, haven't long-term been effective for them. And to say to them, look, you're banging your head off this wall repeatedly. It's not, it's not working. If it was going to work, it would have worked already. And it's not because of anything you're doing wrong. Let's try a different wall. And this wall might be less painful, or we'll try another wall again. And we'll just keep trying walls until we find one that works for you.
So true.
Our wall.
So true.
Yeah, when you talk about this, you seem like just so incredibly passionate about all this. Was this born out of you like treating your patients, or was this do you have a lived experience of like dealing with obesity or dealing with like biologic malfunction?
Yeah. So again, I suppose there's a reason why people get into an area, and I think you'll find a lot of psychiatrists might have lived experience of mental health issues themselves in their family. Cardiologists might have kind of, you know, lived experience themselves or in the family of cardiac issues. So I think it's why when I learned of the biology, it was like a eureka moment. It was like, how have I never heard of this before? Because this makes sense. It's the first time in my life this has made sense, that this is something that I feel I've been kind of, you know, trying to get under wraps myself. And at times have been, you know, my weight has been a lot lower. At times my weight has been a lot higher. But like, you can be an expert in obesity and you can still be standing at the fridge at 10 p.m. at night going, what do I need? What do I want? Kind of, you know, and that kind of that challenge. Like, I could be talking to people all day about this and then go home and blame and shame myself. Like, so it's having that kind of repeated conversation that, you know, and I think, like I said, it's understanding why we struggle. For me, kind of my favorite analogy of all time is my can of beans analogy. I use it everywhere. And it's kind of, you know, figuring out why I might have an issue with my weight. It's like eating a can of beans and then wondering which bean made me fart. And for me, like, I might have a genetic bean.
501.
Yeah. So I might have a genetic bean. I might have an early childhood bean. I might have, you know, how much exercise my mother did when I was in the womb. Was I breastfed or bottle fed? You know, what was my peer group when I was growing up? What level of education did I get to? How's my mental health? What medications have I been on? How's my sleep? How's my stress? What job do I do? Screen time. You know, do I live with another chronic disease that's causing me issues? You know, there is literally an infinite number of reasons why somebody's weight might go up. And then understanding, even if I don't have genetics, even if it was some catalyst or trigger in my life, that idea of the kind of the hypothalamic set point or the dual intervention theory, you know, once my weight is here, now my body's defending that weight. It's keeping it there. Yeah. Like, evolution has created a situation where we're not supposed to lose weight. No other healthy animal on this planet is losing weight. So again, understanding that if I am starving myself, restricting dieting, what I'm achieving is I'm increasing my hunger hormones, I'm reducing my fullness hormones, I'm slowing my metabolism, and I am cranking up that craving, that dopamine, that pleasure response for food. Mm-hmm. So over time, that's why, you know, I can lose weight. I can sustain and endure misery to lose weight. But over time, give it a year, 2 years, 5 years, that weight is going to come back for the vast majority of us. And again, we get back to the weight we were before, and those physiological mechanisms don't reset, so we're at risk of going higher. So again, you know, most people I meet, they'll have this kind of pattern where they've lost weight and gained it repeatedly. We call it yo-yo dieting here in Ireland, and they come to see me and their weight is here. And I'll often say to them, you know, when did you start struggling with your weight? And they say, oh, lifelong. It's okay, well, when did lifelong start? When did you go on your first diet? And say, well, I went to Weight Watchers when I was 12. Mm-hmm. And I say to them, looking back now, do you feel at 12, you felt at the time you had a significant issue. Do you feel now, looking back, that you had an issue? And say, gosh, I was bloody gorgeous. I don't know what I was at. But my friends were gone, or society was telling me I need to be smaller, or the clothes that I wanted to buy were a different size. So they started on the hamster wheel. The first domino went, and they lost weight, and that weight came back. And then they were in the cycle of losing and gaining, losing and gaining. And you superimpose life on that, and it just becomes much more challenging. Yeah. You know, the amount of people that I meet who said, geez, if I could go back to being the size I was when I first went on a diet, you know, it'd be amazing.
Yeah.
And yet they've been banging their head off that wall over and over time. And it's, this is a genetically conferred, neurohormonally regulated, complex, progressive, relapsing, remitting disease that is heavily influenced by our environment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely.
It's time for a change rooted in lasting, evidence-backed wellness. Say goodbye to unsustainable diet culture with Friday's Weight Management Program, a nationwide virtual care platform built to address your biology.
The reason why I started Fridays is that I noticed that patients with obesity are often improperly treated and told to eat less and move more. Well, the science is in, and we now know that obesity is a chronic medical condition like high blood pressure and diabetes, and that there are many factors, including your genetics, that play a role in the development of obesity. We understand this at Fridays, and that's why we make sure to order labs and specific medications that work with you and your biology.
We're revolutionizing weight management, steering clear of weight loss fads, and embracing a scientifically driven approach. Our program charts a path to a healthier you, leveraging evidence-based treatments, nutritional support, and a team of specialized clinicians dedicated to guiding you towards optimal health. We ensure swift appointment scheduling and provide a knowledgeable insurance team for handling prior authorizations for GLP-1 medication. Fridays will also provide safe, compounded GLP-1 medication alternatives with fair and industry-leading pricing. Our eligibility quiz will match you with the provider that corresponds with your medical needs. Go to joinfridays.com to begin your journey to a healthier you today.
I'm wondering, like, so I've talked a lot about on the show how I used to have a lap band, and again, like how I have,
that sucker removed. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I did. And so, which is why I needed to reschedule because I was in fifth grade, but I'm good now. But I had a lap band and I still had it. Like I've had it for 16 years. I don't anymore. Yeah, bye-bye. Evicted. But I had it, and after I had a couple of miscarriages and then I had my son, I gained all of my weight back, even with the lap band, because my brain was like, we need to eat. And so we ate mushy stuff and we lubricated the system. And that's the thing that I did. And I was so embarrassed by it that there was no way I was going to go to a doctor and go, look how pathetic, this is what I thought, this is how I talked to myself. Look how pathetic I am that even with the lap band, I gained all my weight back. And even with the lap band still in me, you know, I continue to lubricate the system and I have a binging disorder. There was no way I was ever going to do that. So I wanted to ask you, it honestly, they had to say it to me, right? And I was going to ask you, in terms of people who are struggling in this way, who are all this negative self-talk, but maybe they're starting to hear about these medications. One of the most like popular questions that I get in one of my lives and all of us is, how do I start my conversation about this with my doctor? How do I convince them? How do I say it? Like, and I think it would be interesting to hear from you. Like, obviously, like it's going to be a little harder. Maybe you might know, right? But like what people go through mentally to be able to like articulate what it is that they think that they need, and advocate for themselves, but also like what questions to ask or how to broach the subject. Maybe you have some examples of patients that you've spoken with that maybe stand out. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah, I think for me, certainly if I throw my mind back to when I was doing regular general practice, family medicine.
That's where most people are going to start. Yeah, so that'd be great.
You're putting out fires all day and somebody comes in and they might have a shopping list of 10 different issues that we got to get through. And rarely is weight prioritized as a conversation. It'll be a you need to lose weight, comment from the doctor or something like that, but not actually kind of an effective conversation. So I think number one is scheduling an appointment specifically to talk about weight and flagging with the secretary or whoever you book your appointment that that's going to be the topic you want to talk about. Okay. So I'm booking a specific one. This is not a door handle issue. I'm on the way out the door. Oh, by the way, you know, I want to lose weight as well. This is something that deserves time and deserves assessment and deserves treatment. So again, the doctor will see it and they'll see this person is coming in to talk about weight. So again, they might be kind of better armed to you know, what's going to be the conversation. Some people will know or will have an experience with their doctor about weight, and it may be a negative experience where they feel they've been blamed or shamed in the past. So in that situation, I think avoiding kind of confrontation and an adversarial kind of situation would be important, because again, if it gets into kind of conflict, that's not going to achieve anything for anybody. So again, going in and having that appointment to talk about weight and sitting down and saying, you know, hey doc, I'm really struggling. I feel that this is the way my life and health is being affected by weight, and I want to look at my treatment options. I've been doing dieting, I've been doing restriction, I can lose weight, I have lost weight, but that weight keeps coming back. I'm hearing more and more about the biology, about the hormones regulating weight, about the role of the subconscious brain. And it's fascinating. You know, is that something you'd be open for me to talk to you about? Turning it around and asking the doctor the question of, you know, would you be open to us having a conversation about that? And the doctor, again, might, if they are a very biased person, they might shut it down. And then I know that that's not going to be a successful consultation. And I say, okay, this is not going well. Would you be open to referring me to somebody who I could talk to about it? So again, I think trying to avoid conflict, like I said, nobody is going to work trying to be a nasty bugger. So it's a case of, and I think as doctors, we don't like not knowing the answer. We don't like not having a solution for people. So again, somebody coming in to ask me, so if I'm putting my mind back to before I was into all this area, somebody asking me, I'd feel very kind of on the back foot, very defensive, very kind of, I don't know what to do. I'd probably send them out for a urine sample and quickly Google what I should be kind of saying to them. And when they come back, I might have a few answers. But again, that's putting me in a position where I feel a lack of knowledge. So I'm going to have to go and address that. So as a doctor, then I'm going to start looking into this. I'm going to start looking into the medications. The difference between that kind of a consultation versus going in, hi, doc, I want X medication. Like that may not, you know, medicine is not, I suppose the commodity is not a prescription. The commodity is kind of treatment. Okay. Right. So again, it's a case of if somebody goes in and they feel it's like a supermarket and they're ordering kind of X, Y, or Z medication, that will put a lot of doctors on the back foot, for right or for wrong. So again, I think having the conversation about this is how I feel my life is being affected and my health is being affected. I've heard about the biology. I've heard about treatments that are available. Is that something that you could talk to me about? Or if not, you know, might you know somebody you could refer me on to?
Great advice. I love it.
A better conversation.
Great advice.
Yeah. That's great, because I think that whenever people come in my lives and they ask that question, one of the things I say is, if they told you they wouldn't prescribe it, they need to have a good reason. Like, it needs to be because of your health, or I also wonder too, like, what's a good way for a doctor to handle it, right? Like, so if they don't know the answer, which we in our country, most of them don't. Okay. And I seriously doubt they're gonna go jump and just start learning about metabolic disorders and all these different things. So what's a good way for them to, is it just to refer out? Because I feel like it's such a big problem. We need our GPs to learn more about it. There's just not enough obesity specialists here. It's like,
I think when you first qualify as a doctor, one of the most difficult things to say is, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. You'll confabulate and you'll kind of fluff the question and you'll kind of shift whatever else because you can't say, I don't know. With experience, you kind of go, yeah, God, we're here for a conversation. I don't know the answer to that. I'll tell you what, I'll go and find out. I know where I can go and find that information. Come back to me in a week or two. I'll look into it. Now, again, that's assuming you have a reasonable relationship with your physician and that there is a kind of collaborative approach. Some people are still in that teach and tell, paternalistic. I'm the doctor. I'm the expert. This is what you need to do. But equally, you know, doctors are a bit like shoes. Sometimes you have to try on a few before you find one that fits right.
Exactly.
So again, you know, and there are different things. You know, certainly.
So true. I have many.
in Ireland, we don't have things like ABOM, the kind of board certified in obesity medicine that you have in the States. We don't have the Obesity Medicine Association, different things. So there are kind of physician locators available kind of online that people can go and look for ABOM certified practitioners who you would hope will have a better understanding of it and would be more open to treatment.
But I think what is ABOM? Stanford?
Is it the Association of Bariatric and Obesity Medicine or the Board of Obesity Medicine or something? Or maybe it's, yeah. So ABOM is like, you know, I'm an ABOM certified practitioner. But somebody might be. So it's doctors who have done further learning and education and have been certified in obesity medicine. And it's brilliant because, again, there's a certain level of knowledge that they will have to have. So again, you know, there are different physician locators that people can look for if they're in the States. In Canada, Obesity Canada is a fabulous resource. They again have, you know, different physician locators as well to find somebody kind of to treat. But I think for me, like, even though I run a medical weight management clinic and most people are coming to see me to talk about a medication, because if they wanted surgery, they'd see a surgeon. Or if they wanted kind of, you know, nutrition input, they might see a dietitian. for me, I think it's still important to acknowledge, you know, okay, well, this is the biology, this is what's going on, this is why it's a medical condition, this is why you deserve treatment. But treatment is surgery, medication, or life intervention. Even though I'm not an expert or don't do this one, this might be the best one for you. So again, you know, people might kind of go in and say, you know, I want the medication. That may or may not be the best treatment for them, but that requires a conversation. So yeah. I think it's kind of having a conversation, but that also then requires the practitioner listening to the person, you know?
Absolutely. I do often say, if you have to convince your doctor, it's the wrong one, right? Like, you have to sit there and bring studies and go through all of these things, and that's not the right guy. You know what I mean?
And it's kind of challenging.
I have a final question I wanted to ask you, but I just want to make sure the ladies had opportunities to say things, because I'm pretty sure my chat is broken. Because I'm having like all these technical things and binging going on. So I wanted to make sure that they had an opportunity to ask anything that they may want to before I asked you the final one, which will wrap it up so lovely in a bow, I swear.
I'm good. I'm better for this conversation. Like I'm more educated for this conversation. And I think it's so cool that we have doctors like Dr. Crotty that are out here advocating for people for fair and equitable treatment for obviously a medical, 100%. Very serious medical condition.
Very serious. Yeah. What about you, Kat?
I know you may have touched on it a little bit, but do you have any like quick responses or anything in your toolkit that you use when you're speaking with somebody who is biased about the treatment? Maybe not a professional, not a practitioner, but just anybody.
As in kind of how to respond to them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it, again, obviously, depending on who you're meeting and where it is it in kind of, you know, regular life, or is it in a healthcare setting? But again, for me, so for me, again, it's a case of, you know, that idea that telling somebody who's living with obesity to eat less and move more is like telling somebody with depression to cheer up.
Yeah.
Because again, they kind of go like,
ridiculous.
I suppose it's associating it with a medical condition they are aware of and understand, but it's also a medical condition that has been stigmatized in the past. So there's a lot of parallels. I think we are with obesity medicine probably where we were with mental health maybe 20, 30 years ago. So that's kind of going on. Again, it's can be kind of challenging, particularly when people, you know, I suppose don't understand the biology, the disease of obesity, if they don't have lived experience themselves. Because like I said, for many people, this is an affront to their ego. It's an affront to their value of themselves. Because you're telling them, you know, you're not thin because you're better than me. You're thin because you have different biology than me, or different life experiences than me. So again, it's a case of, you know, and I think the one actually kind of Lydia, I think said there, as far as, you know, we're all playing the same game, but we've all got different set of rules, you know, or, you know, it's life is not the same for everybody. If we all ate and drank the same thing from birth, we wouldn't all be the same size. So, but I think the one for me in different things I've done, the one about kind of comparing it to depression or asthma or another medical condition that people understand, I think has a lot of value, and that seems to resonate with people. And you pick any disease you want, and particularly if you know the person has a certain medical condition they're living with, you can personalize it to them. Because again, they'll kind of appreciate, oh, yeah, actually, that makes a lot of sense. Because again, it's not that I don't know what to do. It's that I can't do it because of my, or it's challenging to do it because of my biology, because of my environment, because of a lot of other shit going on in my life.
That's good.
Perfect.
But it is hard, work. Especially
be armed people.
Holidays, like meeting, you know, meeting with family, whether it's, you know, close family or not, like the bias. If it's just, I mean, I think even like I've noticed when I've started to share what I'm doing here, right, with the girls, with the podcast, there's so much stigma, and I often say to them, like, I've noticed that they are engaging with my content just on my regular Facebook with my family. Like 80% of it is my family. I get maybe 10 people like that will respond to any of my content. And it's because there's so much stigma and misinformation, all these things. And I posted recently, because having to have the lap band surgery, I was like, I'm the face of obesity. This is what this looks like, guys. We're just doing whatever treatment's available. And I was like, but the world is not flat. Like, go read a book, you know, or if you don't, if you can't, watch the podcast. So
it's interesting because we have a kind of an Instagram account for the clinic, and that's where I would put a lot of our kind of thoughts and ramblings that come through my head. But I did a poll of people to ask them, you know, if you're on medication, who do you tell? Do you tell absolutely nobody? Do you tell your partner or closest family member? Do you tell your friends, or do you tell anybody who listen?
Yeah.
And it's interesting, 15% of people said they'd tell anybody who listen.
Yeah. Only
10% of people said they would tell their friends. 50% of people, give or take, would tell only those very, very, very close to them. And 25% said they would not tell a single soul on the planet.
This is very
interesting. 75% of people would only tell partner, best friend or family member or nobody at all.
Wow. That was me.
So again, it's the stigma. And it's interesting because here in Ireland, when somebody is noticed to be losing weight, everybody's interested. What do you do? What do you do? What's the
deal? Oh, yeah.
You know, it's kind of constantly being asked. And a lot of people say, oh, yeah, I'm doing that diet club again, you know, kind of type thing, even though they might be on a treatment. And again, it's because of the shame, you know, the bias, the stigma around these treatments. So it's we have with medical tourism, we have people going to Turkey, having bariatric surgery, coming back and not telling their family.
Oh, yeah, we have that.
Not telling their doctor. And it's like it's very dangerous. It's concerning. You know, it's I have patients who are saying, God, yeah, these medications need to be kept in the refrigerator before they're used. Not going to work for me, my husband, my wife, you know, is going to see it. Whatever else. I'm going to say, you know, would they be open to a conversation about it? You know, so it's interesting. There is huge stigma. And even when we have these discussions, I suppose that we can have these chats and people are like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense for about a day or two. And then kind of our brain kind of goes back towards kind of what it might have been thinking before. Yeah. You know, so there's a huge conversation here at the end, you know, and this is
for sure
brilliant form to have it.
Yes. I think it's
I'm happy to have you for the conversation.
I know very much. I
think do love talking.
Weight Watchers or diet clubs like you're talking about here. Mm. You know, we have a lot of that here. I think it's interesting that when you tell someone you're on a diet, like I've never had anybody go, you know, you're just gonna gain it back when you're off the diet. Right. But here you tell them you're on the medicine. Bam. It's the first thing they say.
The first thing they say. You know? That's right.
And then you got to go into it's a chronic disease. It's like exhausting.
And the answer to that is very simple. What happens if I stop my blood pressure meds?
Yeah.
What happens if I stop my cholesterol meds?
Yes. That's always like the argument I go to. Like if I had a heart condition and I was on medication to treat my heart condition, would you tell me to stop taking those? Or would you tell me, I'm stealing it from somebody else? Or if I was taking it to prevent a heart condition, would you tell me I was stealing it from the people that were, you know, 10 steps from a heart attack or whatever? They wouldn't.
Right.
Like if I told them I'm just going to stop taking my Synthroid because my thyroid's fine now. So.
Yeah. Like why? Why would you do that? That makes no sense, right?
Don't ever do that. I tried that. It was bad.
No, ma'am.
Don't ever do that.
Chaos, right?
Yeah. So that we can tie everything up and give you your time back because you've spent so much with us and we're so thankful for it.
It's getting dark outside as I'm watching the window behind me.
Yeah. It gets dark very early here, so don't worry about it.
You kind of mentioned a couple times, I feel like a couple years ago before all the shortages, you felt like kind of the narrative and the, like a little bit, I think you said even the culture like was trying to shift and change and it seemed kind of headed in a positive direction. And now we've got all these shortages, which unfortunately I don't think are going to get better for a while, you know? What was it? What was the catalyst before these things that you felt like, what were the things that were working that you started to see light bulbs go off? You started to see people being treated better because we would like to replicate that. You know? So any ideas that you have?
Yeah, there's two things. One is the patient voice. Is people talking about their lived experience, describing it. Again, like I do a podcast, I do a kind of a talk. And people, it resonates with them. They understand it because they've lived it. And again, I think, you know, peer-to-peer support, when, you know, we talk about diets, we talk about restriction, we talk about kind of, you know, macros. We don't talk about appetite. We don't talk about binge eating. We don't talk about, you know, emotional eating or stress eating. You know, I think I'm living in a vacuum that I'm the only person on the planet who's dealing with this. But yet every person I meet is different, but the amount of people who have kind of commonality in the things they're struggling with is amazing. So I think talking about these issues, you know, this is, and it's difficult because it's putting ourselves in a vulnerable place where we're kind of admitting something that we have felt shame for, but saying, you know, God, this is something I really struggle with, but now I know it's not my fault because of, you know, my understanding of the biology. But listening to people talk about their lived experience of living with obesity, of how they've been treated in wider sense, but also how they've been treated for their obesity, I think is exceptionally powerful. And it's really powerful to healthcare practitioners. That's one thing, is the patient voice and is hearing about the lived experience is incredibly important and powerful. I think an increased understanding of the biology is huge as well. Understanding the genetic predisposition, 40 to 70% of our risk of weight is genetically linked. 80% of the genes are coding what's happening in the subconscious brain, hunger hormones, fullness hormones, reward pathways, and then all those other modulators in my environment. So again, you know, there's lots of reasons, back to my can of beans analogy, lots of reasons why I might struggle with weight. You can empty the can, but my weight is still going to be where it is. That might stop me gaining further weight, but it's not going to treat me, because prevention is different than treatment. You know, stopping smoking is not a treatment for lung cancer. Sunscreen is not a treatment for skin cancer. So it's there's a difference between prevention and treatment.
Love it.
And then kind of making treatment available. And I think certainly for doctors, certainly here in Ireland, as far as in primary care, usually we will have a healthy or a healthy skepticism about new treatments that become available, because people have been burned by different treatments and, you know, big bag boogeymen come out of the closet then kind of, you know, down the line with side effects and long-term issues. So we're often reluctant to start a new medication. We'll usually let our specialists in the hospitals kind of use these medications first, and then we'll gain kind of experience of seeing our patients treated with them and the pros and the cons, and then we'll get comfort with re-prescribing them, and then we might start initiating them. The problem is people are not being treated for obesity in hospitals. Because, you know, there's large numbers. So again, we need to take that step to kind of, you know, get the confidence to start having the conversations, talking about referral or treatment, you know, and talking about it in the right way. So I've kind of forgotten what the question was, but
no, that was the answer. Yeah,
that was great. That was perfect.
It was like, how to
get loud, be loud, talk about it.
Yeah.
We're doing it
at the patient level.
Yeah. Keep it going.
Yeah.
You too. Hopefully, you're doing such an incredible job.
You're doing a great work. Ireland.
Yeah. And it clearly is happening globally. So, or else we wouldn't be talking. So keep doing it, please, because it helps us, and we just want help. And we just want our you know, our community to get help too. So we're so thankful that what you're doing. Please don't stop. Please don't stop. It's
brilliant. It's brilliant to have the opportunity. We have some fabulous advocates here in Ireland. We've got a group called the Irish Coalition of People Living with Obesity, the ICPO, who do brilliant advocacy meetings, who support people, who kind of we bring, who come and give us kind of insights into the lived experience. And I'd honestly say, like, I've learned more from people living with obesity than any book, than any medical teaching. It's listening to people's stories is incredibly powerful.
Yes. Awesome. Absolutely. Awesome. Thank you. Well, thank you for letting us be heard. You know, we appreciate
that. Thank you for being here and having a conversation with us. It's so important, like you said, to just continue to just keep the conversation going, even though it might be hard, right? For a multitude of reasons, it's worth it.
Yeah, it's worth it. All of it is worth it. Other than the only thing I will say is not worth it is if you are in pain taking your medication, there's something wrong. See your doctor. It's not worth it. Don't push through like you have with everything else, like we did with HCG or Fenerman. That's trash. Don't do that anymore. Go see your doctor.
Absolutely.
Just saying for the record. Awesome. All right. Well, I'm now going to exit you stage left. And thank you very much for your time. We're going to talk behind your back.
So I can't wait to hear what you're saying about me.
And special one more shout out for your mug. I love your mug.
Oh, yeah. That's my wife's mug. I don't want to steal it. She's the brains of the operation in my house. I'm just the, like I said, she reads all the books, watches all the films, listens to all the stuff, and she gives me the cliff notes on it.
Well, that's very helpful. Bravo to your wife as well.
Absolutely. I think I was a genius to find her and lock her up, you know?
Absolutely.
You lucky. Right?
All right. Listen, you take care and have a great day.
Thank
you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Aw,
have fun.
Yay.
That's so great. That was so awesome.
I'm so thankful to hear like this conversation happening in other countries and, you know, and also the way that it aligns with what's happening here, which in my opinion shows that it is science. Like it's all connected to facts, you know? I know. I just thought it was awesome, man. There were so many gems in there. It was like having one with Dr. Toomer. We're like, there was some good stuff. So we're going to have to make sure we get out there for all of our people on TikTok that don't like long form content.
Shivering.
It's cold. Oh, no. It's so interesting to me that like all the parallels that he talked about of like what we deal here. Cause we always think like we as Americans, we always think like we're an island and our problems are only our problems and they don't exist anywhere else. And the truth is they do.
Yeah, they do.
The biome.
Mm-hmm. Really, even the coverage, even how much it costs, you know, now we may think in the States, right, that $200 is expensive, right? But it's not $1,000, right? It's not $500. But, you know, in terms of income and the way that their countries work, $200 is a tremendous amount of money, you know? Right. So I think that's just something to think about. And so it is people that have excess $200 to be able to spend on, you know, treating their health and treating their disease. And and that's it. So it's not like, and this is the second time we've had someone on our show from another country. This is like, you know, no, we ain't got to figure it out and we ain't doing it right. And so, I think the more we hear people say that, we're like, listen, I know you think that like socialized medicine is like the way, but maybe it is in many areas, or I don't know, but like, I promise you it ain't for an obesity treatment, you know?
Right. It's still sick care. Yeah.
It is. It's a sick care system.
It's still sick care.
It still is. Yeah. Like people say, yeah, you're definitely going to get great treatment if you break your leg. Like you need some treatment real quick. Like we got you. Best thing you can, right? But when it comes to these other things, especially things that haven't, even though all the science backs it up, that this is a chronic disease, you know, especially with all of that. I can't believe that he is called out for once being a speaker. That doesn't happen here. Like we've got doctors all over the place that are speakers for Novo and Lilly and all of that, you know, and that he's called out for that, or that he's called out for even saying the names of the medications. Yeah. Like that must stifle him so much in being able to educate, you know,
the media in
Europe. I'm really shocked to hear that and disappointed for him.
The media in Europe is a whole nother level.
It's that whole bias thing. It happens all. He's correct. I have friends who work in like medical device agencies, cardiologists that give talks. Yeah,
yeah.
So this company will pay him, compensate him for his travel,
and for his expertise. He should be paid for his expertise as well. Like I think that's just garbage. That people are not like, you know, like I consult for telehealth. Why? Because I have a marketing background and because I have a lived experience and there's a and you know what? I charge. There's something wrong with that. It's a tremendous amount of time away from my family and all of these different things. So you have a certain expertise. Why would you not be compensated for that? That's really, it's not like you're rolling in dough here, but like you should be able to be. I hate that for him.
For me, it was just another parallel. It's just another. Like
another parallel
that's trying to like in America, the media outlets trying to sort of villainize obesity, treatment for obesity and these medications and physicians and patients talking about these treatments. It's all like a level of villainy for
it really is
outlets here, but here too. Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Across the pond.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. Well, I thought this was such a good episode. I think people will really like to hear it. You know,
absolutely.
We got season 3 coming up in January. I think it's a really good time to be able to people see this during New Year's resolutions, right? So that when they're going into it, they're not going into it with, oh, I got to lose 20 pounds, 50 pounds, 100 pounds. No, you need to improve your health.
Don't punish your body.
And this would be a really great way for you to do that. And just learn and watch the plus sides and, you know, come visit us on TikTok and talk to your doctor. And I love his tips at the end for like how to broach that conversation. So many people are nervous about it. So I think nice, like we can tell them all day long and that's great, you know, but hearing from an actual physician, also one that, you know, when we heard that too, like we had Chase on the show from Iveem, right? We had him on the show, like episode 2. And he said, listen, I even thought that way. He's like, I did too. But the difference is, I think now is there's no more fucking excuse for it. Like that's, I get that we thought that way in the past, but there's no longer an excuse. You need, and the bare minimum, if you don't feel comfortable with it, either say, I don't know, I'll go find out, or say, here's a specialist for you to go to. And that's got to change. That's got to change. You know, it's, I have no more, I am in no a more, better okay. place to forgive okay. doctors for the way I've been treated. Right. Yeah. But I'm not in a place to forgive the ones that continue to act ignorant and asinine.
Yeah.
You know,
100%. I agree.
Yeah. It's no longer an excuse. It's not acceptable.
Especially like what you mentioned, Kim, the doctor that didn't even say hello or didn't speak to you, just said, I'm concerned about your weight. Yeah.
Yeah. The minute she walked in, I've never even met her before. And she goes, your weight's a concern. I'm like, who the F are you? Hello. Hello, it's nice to meet you. Like, I'm
hi, I live in this body, you know?
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute.
I was like 200 pounds, guys. Like, I was young and like 200 pounds. Like, I wasn't, you know, I was like in high school. So 200 pounds in high school is quite a bit, you know, but I was also a bigger human. Like,
oh my God. And then she said that to a teenager, you're already sensitive. You're already having.
I was on Flagline, very, very active. Okay. Very active. To me, I was a good size me. Now I got made fun of and all the things like all plus size kids in high school usually do, at least when we were growing up, you know, but yeah, like that's been the kind of experience. Even when I was pregnant with my son, and this is when I should have known to leave that doctor, the woman walked in. The first thing she said is, obviously, kid you not, your weight is the biggest risk factor. Well, I'm fucking pregnant now. So how about we talk about how to solve for these things instead of you telling me that I'm fat and now I'm pregnant. What are we doing? What are we doing here? You know what I mean? Like that shouldn't be the thing. And you know what? It wasn't a concern. It was never a problem when I was pregnant. So it's like, they just make these like assumptions because they read these things in these books that are 20 freaking years old, don't have new diets. And they treat us not like people and not like humans that have been struggling in a body that frankly, I feel like has constantly betrayed me.
I feel all the time that I feel like so many doctors need more training with like their bedside manner and like not even just GPs or like obesity doctors. Once they get there, they're great. But
yeah, for sure.
Like pain management doctors or even surgeons, like bedside manner should maybe be something that like let's give that a little bit of time in our medical training so that people know how to have those. So these doctors know how to have these conversations with people.
Yeah.
But we're up against almost like decades of bias being taught to our professors.
So bad.
Teachers.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Yeah. There's just no excuse for it anymore. It has to stop.
But now we have those post-visit surveys, right?
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. There's something.
Yeah, because honestly, if they get bad reviews, then it does apparently hurt their, I don't know if it's their reimbursement or like bonuses that they can get. Like, have you heard about this? Like,
I didn't know that.
If you can keep your people out of the hospital, like you can get a bonus. I'm not kidding.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't know how that's even like legal, but we've heard people, doctors tell us that on the show before.
Wow.
Interesting. If you can keep your people out of the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would make sense. Cause like when someone's hospitalized, obviously it's costing insurance tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars for you to be hospitalized. Yeah. So
maybe they should treat them with GLP-1s and
that's what I was
improve their heart health.
You said what I'm
there thinking. You go. That might do it. You know, we'll see. It's interesting what he said about responders too. Like how he was like 50% don't respond to GLP-1s, right? And I think that stat was pretty, I thought, eye-opening because I don't feel like we hear that many on TikTok, but then again, I don't think a lot of people are like saying it. And oh my God, when he said that thing where he was like, and I'm sorry, I remember the words exactly, but he was like, you didn't fail the treatment failed you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like, right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing, like even with my lap band, right? Like it was a treatment And it was successful for a while, but then it failed me. Right. And that, and not I failed it, which is for sure what I told myself for 16 years, you know?
Right.
So I thought that was really profound. Many gems. He was lovely.
He's great.
Yes. Yeah. Just a lovely guest. We're so
glad. He was just as great as I hyped him up to be.
Yeah.
Totally. I knew he was going to go great. He's like,
he was so good. Yeah.
He was like, it was just like one of the first times that I heard a practitioner like say all the things that we say all the time.
Yes.
Like, and I mean, don't get me wrong. There's tons of practitioners that are doing that now. But like back when I found him months and months and months ago, he was the one that was really like, he's so passionate about it. He's not scared to be loud about it. And he's just so practical, like so like reality based, not just like, well, these are the studies and this is the science and this is how we see it, or this is how we used to see it. And this is how the science shows us now. Like he's just like on a very basic, like, this is how you're living your life. This is the reality of your life. And it doesn't have to be, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like for me, like that gets through to me a lot simpler than, well, this is what the such and such study found. And, you know, I did the science. Don't get me wrong. But like the reality, like someone actually like comparing the reality of what I'm actually living with what everything shows is more practical.
It's nice to hear that. And I think the reason that is like he said, it's the voices, right? Like he sits down and meets with these people and listens to them. And it's like he said, he doesn't have like a ton amount of time, which I think is such a good advice for people to schedule an appointment specifically to talk about treating obesity and their weight, right? Like specifically. And then they know exactly like what to get in and out. Cause if you think about when you go to a doctor, I don't know about y'all, but I'm there 2 hours. I wait in the room. And then I got to go do my weight. And then I got to go do my vitals. And then I hang out with like a PA or something who does like more stuff. And then before the time I'm out, there's been 2 hours. And I spent maybe 10 minutes with a doctor. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And so it's almost like you have to like prep everybody before just so the doctor can actually get to you and listen to what you have to say.
Yeah.
I always appreciate the ones that go, do you have any other concerns? Right? Mm-hmm. Like I always appreciate those because most of the time it's like, you know, but there's no, I don't see any other way. There are not enough obesity specialists. There are not enough endocrinologists. There are not enough bariatric surgeons. And actually even apparently cardiology, I've been learning about that lately. A lot of cardiologists are like, this all comes down to the heart. So we're about treating all the things because all of those things are what hurt the heart and the heart is what makes you, you know? So to them, like a lot of them have been on board for a while, which I did not know until recently, you know? So I think that's really interesting. Anyway, what a great episode. I thought we could end. Anybody got any NSVs or scale victories or anything?
This is a medium t-shirt. Woo! Medium. Medium. I haven't been in a medium since middle school.
Oh, girl. That is
that's incredible.
And that's not even like
a it, girl.
That's like a t-shirt, right? Like that's
This is just a t-shirt. It's a plain t-shirt. It's not like, well, and when I was in middle school, I will say this is a women's cut. When I was in middle school, I was in a medium men's cut t-shirt.
Same. Yeah. Like I always had to wear either like the adult size show or size clothes. There was like when I was in middle school, there was not like plus size stuff.
Right.
Like that. Right. And when I got into high school, I was wearing adult plus size stuff and it was really difficult to find anything that was on trend. So I never like fit in that way. It was really hard. I think it's gotten better.
It really has.
Yeah. You know, and I hope that will continue regardless of us, you know, obese people shrinking and tanking the economy, you know?
I'm so sorry. I'm buying what's actually made for a person of my gender and size and whatever. Like my apologies that I'm not buying the men's Hayes t-shirts anymore.
Totally.
Men's don't, they don't flatter a female figure anyway. You know, they make you look boxy. Yeah. The women's cut is so much nicer.
I'll share this with you. So my husband, he bought me another Eagles jersey and I had sent him like the link to like buy this jersey. And I'm like, listen, they go in and out of stock a lot. We just had Black Friday. So they had a big sale. I'm sure people bought them up, you know, just like keep going back to it, like until it's available. You know, if you don't get it, it's okay. I won't be disappointed. It's all right. Well, they obviously like the thing I had sent him, like it showed like kind of going like way out of stock or whatever. And so he decided, oh, I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm just going to like search for it and see if I can find it somewhere else. Right. And he's like, I found it. I got it. And I was like, okay, show me. So he pulls the phone up and he shows it to me. And I was like, okay, so that's a men's jersey. And he goes, well, how can you tell? And I was like, do you see how boxy it is? Like, that's not cut for my figure. If you know what I mean. And he goes, oh, wait. No, okay. Yeah, I kind of see it, I guess. And then I had to like show him like side by side. Like women's stuff is cut like this, you know, to accommodate our body. Men's stuff is cut very boxy because your bodies are built different. And so anyway, we learned a valuable lesson. Awesome.
What about you, Kat? Anything?
I was going to say women's cut shirts, just they're also built, they're manufactured for the girls.
Yeah,
exactly. I was gonna say,
my girls are so sad these days. I'm upset.
So if you wear a men's t-shirt, it squeezes here.
It's different.
But speaking of the girls, I finally I called an NSV. I locked in and parted with my money and spent $300 on new bras because no bra fits me. I have been on sports bras, which are fine. Those are the ones that are in my size because those are expensive. Yeah. But I'm like, I need some grown up.
Equitable.
I don't look crazy in a t-shirt. Yeah. Brassieres.
Yeah.
Brassieres. I became like this gap in between my the flesh and the cup.
Hey, yeah. I get it.
So I'm finally spent. I got a lot of got new bras.
Oh, good. That's awesome.
That is
you know what? And that's like. It feels good. Like when you put them on and you can, like, I feel like bras and like underwear and like t-shirts are like the thing that you're like, wow, my body is really changing. Like things are really different.
Yeah. Cool. It's certainly a mental struggle when it happens. I've been very much like, do I need to stop here? Kind of, like I've been having a lot of, and I mean, I'm far from even being considered overweight. Like I'm far, like but I've literally thought that, like, am I going to look weird when I'm smaller? What am I going to look like? Like I go through all of those things. Like maybe I should just stop at a 14. I mean, for God's sakes, like a 12 was middle school. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, cause I am a larger person. Right. So that has been a struggle. I can't say I really have any NSVs. I mean, I've bought, I'm a little kind of upset because I went a really long time without buying any clothes. And then I went kind of bananas when TikTok shop came out and bought all these clothes. And now they're frigging huge, huge, not even like, you know, a little like, and now they're all huge. And I don't have time to like sell them or anything. So
you go to Poshmark and just resell them.
Girl, then I'd have to post it and talk about what it is.
And then you
like,
have to send it X amount of time.
I thought about giving it to my sister and being like, you know what? You can go post them and you can keep the commission. You know what I mean? Like you can keep the money.
Somebody can do it on consignment for you or something.
I don't know. That would take more time and effort. And I just don't has it. I don't has it.
Well, maybe we should do a clothing swap at the event.
We should do that. That's what we should. That's we did
a
it.
Great idea.
People loved it. Yeah, we should do that. I feel like a lot of people that are coming are really tiny though. So I don't know. They probably can't wear my stuff. Maybe their friends or family can. Who knows? Some of my stuff still have tags on it. Like I didn't even get a chance to wear it, and I was out of it. But I also think because of the body dysmorphia kind of thing, like I was buying bigger sizes and not really knowing what I was wearing. And
that's a struggle.
I'm still not sure.
Yeah, you don't know.
I'm like, I don't know what size to buy.
Right.
Yeah.
I like over the weekend I was at Costco and there was this really nice like flannel shirt that was Sherpa line. And my husband's like totally into those. And we're kind of like the same size right now. And I'm just kind of like looking at it going, no, I think this is too big. This isn't, no. And it was like the normal size that I would buy. I would buy like a large X or an XL. Right. And, I thought,
XL for you, Lydia.
I thought, no, there's no way that a medium is going to fit me. And I was like, you know what? I don't care. I took my
jacket off. It is weird, right?
I tried it on and I'm like, what the heck is, who is this person? You know, it feels like it's sort of an out of body experience when you've lived so long in a bigger body. And like, you know, in your brain, this is my size and it's not.
Yeah. And Dr. Toomer has been very open on one of the shows before where she was like, I cry sometimes in the dressing room and it's not because the reasons I used to, right? Like it's because I don't like being this small. Do you know what I mean? And it kind of
scares. Yeah, Dr. Toomer said she likes to keep some weight on her. She likes to have a little,
The Dr. Toomer has significant health issues and she needs to take the medicine. It's not just because of obesity. It's because type 2 and her heart issues, you know? Yeah. So I understand why that would be such a struggle mentally. It all really is. This why, but you know what? The medicine put us in a place, like we talked with the Dr. Rachel, to receive therapy and changes and, you know, cognitive behavioral type of changes, right? So I hope everybody takes advantage of that. And we will be having Dr. Rachel on more to talk about how we can do that, because we were very honest with her about, like, listen, there's so many people that can't afford it or they're not going to do it or whatever. And she was like, how can we help? So she's going to be on more to try to at least help us with that, you know, in general, generally speaking, right? Like not actually helping a specific human. And maybe you'll be able to use some of those coping skills, you know, to change and help you through this journey, you know? All right.
Yes.
Let's wrap it up. It's been 2 friggin' hours. So YouTube's going to be pissed at us. We're going to have to cut it in 2 parts. 2 parts.
Oh, that editor. She's too much. I'll tell you, that editor.
That editor.
All right. So hasta la pasta, and we will see you next week.
See you guys.
Bye to restrictive weight loss methods, and hello to Iveem, the number one prescriber of GLP-1 medications. GLP-1s curb cravings, stabilize blood sugar, increase energy, and balance A1C levels to regulate your body and kickstart your weight loss journey. Iveem is committed to making medical weight loss accessible, affordable, and customized because we believe that's how it should be. Sign up for free and get 20% off our accessibility programs.
Introducing Peptide Vite. It's the first daily natural vitamin to help support a reduction in the major side effects of GLP-1s. Peptide Vite supports fatigue, nausea, GI side effects, and promotes better metabolism. It is third-party tested, made in the USA, in a FDA-certified facility. Peptide Vite is a game-changer all-in-one daily supplement. Pharmacist and physician formulated to be safe and effective. Use code PLUS20 for 20% off at zennutrients.com.
It's time for a change rooted in lasting, evidence-backed wellness. Say goodbye to unsustainable diet culture with Friday's Weight Management Program, a nationwide virtual care platform built to address your biology.
The reason why I started Fridays is that I noticed that patients with obesity are often improperly treated and told to eat less and move more. Well, the science is in, and we now know that obesity is a chronic medical condition like high blood pressure and diabetes, and that there are many factors, including your genetics, that play a role in the development of obesity. We understand this at Fridays, and that's why we make sure to order labs and specific medications that work with you and your biology.
We're revolutionizing weight management, steering clear of weight loss fads, and embracing a scientifically driven approach. Our program charts a path to a healthier you, leveraging evidence-based treatments, nutritional support, and a team of specialized clinicians dedicated to guiding you towards optimal health. We ensure swift appointment scheduling and provide a knowledgeable insurance team for handling prior authorizations for GLP-1 medication. Fridays will also provide safe, compounded GLP-1 medication alternatives with fair and industry-leading pricing. Our eligibility quiz will match you with the provider that corresponds with your medical needs. Go to joinfridays.com to begin your journey to a healthier you today.
You interested in understanding GLP-1 medications like Ozempic, Wegovy, or Mounjaro? Then join us on the Plus Sides, Cracking the Obesity Code, the groundbreaking podcast helping people change their lives one episode at a time. The Plus Sides podcast is a disruptor. We're breaking down barriers, smashing stereotypes, and sharing inspiring stories that'll leave you feeling informed and empowered. Join us every week to learn from doctors who are specialists around GLP-1 medications like Ozempic, Wegovy, or Mounjaro. They'll provide you with science and facts to validate these incredible stories. But that's not all. We'll also bring you the voices of the GLP-1 Mounjaro TikTok community, real people who face the challenges of obesity-related diseases and disorders and discovered the incredible plus sides of GLP-1 medications. Our episodes are filled with heartwarming stories, laughter, and moments of triumph. You'll connect with our amazing community members who are reclaiming their health and experiencing their fullest lives.
Are you ready to embark on a journey of discovery and empowerment? Tune in to The Plus Sides, Cracking the Obesity Code, and together we'll change the narrative around obesity and end the stigma. Subscribe now on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform and join our incredible community. Let's celebrate the plus sides of life together, because every story deserves to be heard. Every life deserves to shine, and everyone deserves access to expert knowledge and medication. The Plus Sides Podcast. You're not alone. It's not your fault.